New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
We're hating. What's up, everybody? Welcome to West by Pod, a podcast about WVU football, the Big 12 Conference, and the Backyard Brawl. I'm Joel Bracken at WV Stats Guy, joined as always by Jordan Pinto. He's Game Day Shorts, and it is Pit Week, officially. Something we get to do a little more often nowadays. It's nice that it hasn't been so long, but I think it feels good the same. How are you feeling ahead of the Backyard Brawl, Jordan?
Probably slightly worse than I did 2 weeks ago. After we looked like shit against Penn State, I don't really feel a whole lot better despite the win last week. Pitt has an offense. I think this is one of my favorite things about, you know, you get into the season, you start getting a couple of data points. It's not just reading numbers off of a website and speculating, right? Like we can, actually, we have a decent feel for what this team is going to look like now. I'm probably not as confident as I was. We're still going to win by at least 2 touchdowns.
At least.
But it's not going to be 5 touchdowns like I thought maybe, you know, over the summer. I was kind of feeling like we were going to blow them the fuck out. But I'm ready to fucking hate. I'll tell you that. Me and Joel are going to be up there. We're going to be doing everything we can to bring the W back to Morgantown. Yeah, how you feeling?
Dude, I'm feeling good. Yeah, dude, West by Pod first. We're going to the game together. So we'll be in Pittsburgh. If you're going to be up there, hit us up. I'm excited, dude. It's going to be, I mean, like, the Backyard Brawl is the type of game that it doesn't matter if both teams have a losing record. It's still, like, always fun and has its own appeal. It's just so fun that in this era where we don't play a ton of games against teams we care that much about, this is one I still feel like I care about a lot, and I feel like a lot of people still like get up for it no matter what's going on. Like Pitt's probably not going to have a great year, you know, we're hoping to have a great year, but we'll see. And it doesn't matter, like all those hints are kind of thrown out this week. It's all about this game. So I'm excited.
I want to beat him real bad. I want to beat him real bad.
I want to beat him bad, yeah, and I want to avenge the last time. You and I went to the game last time in Pittsburgh as well. We weren't sitting together, but we went to the game. The renewal of the Backyard Brawl 2 years ago in Pittsburgh, night game, super exciting until, you know, 5 minutes to play. Hoping to avenge that, you know, get on the right side of, the two teams since the renewal. And sort of catapult ourselves off into Big 12 play, put in their spot. So,
absolutely.
Oh yeah. So we're gonna get into that in a few. We'll start, I guess, with our normal review. So we played Albany this week. Final score was 49-14. There was like a few minutes where if you didn't know any better, you almost might think the game was close there. Was it like right in the beginning of the third quarter? I don't know. There was like, or maybe it was towards the end of the second quarter. I don't remember, but there was like a little angst almost for a second. Neil in his presser said like, yeah, I don't, the game did not feel in question to him, but, we really put our foot down in the second half, sort of ran away with it. I don't know. What are your like big takeaways? I know this is obviously FCS team. They're a good one, but it's an FCS team. Did you get what you wanted out of this, or, you know, how did it feel?
No, not really. You know, full disclosure, I actually didn't get to watch a whole lot of it. I was down in Clemson on a work trip, and part of the work trip was going to the Clemson App game on Saturday night, which was a lot of fun. Clemson tailgates, very, very nice. Clemson in general, I kind of fucking hated myself for how much I like the campus, and everything's just right on top of each other. It's all super walkable. It's pretty nice. They don't go as hard as West Virginia does. Possible pro and con. But yeah, it was a fun day. But I had it on at the tailgate, and all the other West Virginia graduates who were part of this thing that I'm part of, we're all crowded around the table and we were watching the game. And yeah, man, you know, we get up 21-0, we're feeling good. They get the two quick touchdowns where it looks like, I mean, you know, it looks like we're probably going to score in two plays. Jaheim gets stripped. And yeah, what, 21-14 at half, then they get the ball and they're like driving. Am I remembering this right? Because at this point I had stopped watching. We had gone into the game, but we had a goal line stand.
It was 21-14 with 2 minutes to go in the half. And then we had a Gary Green 40-yard run.
Okay.
To sort of close the half out. So sort of put it away as the half ended.
Yeah. Yep. With the goal line stand on the front end of that. Right. So, yeah, you know, I mean, there's some things to feel good. The offense looked much, much better, obviously. You know, it looked a little bit more like, I think, what we expected. But the defense, man, still big problems defensively. It's the same thing we saw last year. You know, Albany threw for 300 yards. So I think that's more offense than they had total the week before against Long Island. So that's obviously not great. You know, there's some excuses, or maybe not excuses, but some explanations from the coaches that you don't quite buy, because it's just like, it's fucking Albany, man. You know, like, why, like, yeah. I don't care, you know, what coverage we're in. Why are the guys just running past our guys? You know, so that's not great. Got more pressure this time. Still didn't get to the quarterback as much as I think we needed to, obviously, because he still had time to throw for 300 yards. But, I mean, ultimately, the result ended up about like I expected. You know, one handily, it made it look pretty easy for the most part. But don't feel super great coming into this game in light of what Pitt's done the first 2 weeks. So, yeah, I don't know. What are your, do you have any like big pros? Like, do you feel better about this team after Albany than you did before the game?
No, but I don't know that much would have made me feel like, even if you line up and you're like the most disciplined team and you like beat the socks off an FCS team, I'm usually just going to be like, yeah, we're way more talented. Like, of course. Yeah. You know, I think Garrett Green had a nice game, you know, 17 for 23, three touchdowns, really, you know, put the game no harm's way. He did his thing, you know, had the big run.
Yep.
He looked in command. Offensive line, I think, played pretty good. Running game, you know, Donaldson goes over 100 yards. He had 125 on the ground. Jaheim showed it. The fumble was unfortunate, but, like, if that's going to happen, you want it to happen in this game, right? Like, yeah. That's where you wanted to take that lump in a game where that's, like, the least consequential time. You're going to have, like, a 40-yard run flip to a fumble. You know, that just is a good reminder. If we're still talking offense, I'm mild to moderately concerned about our receiving core other than Cole Taylor. Just in terms of like, I just don't know if we play a great defense, if we're going to have guys who can get open, and I hope I'm wrong, but, Cole Taylor, I think, is going to continue to do his thing. He had a great game, just three catches, but, he had an 85 grade overall for PFF. Yeah, but I mean, even here looking, you know, nobody gets more than four targets. Nobody gets more than four catches. Hudson Clement with four catches. Nobody has more than 50 yards. You know, you're hoping you have a tutty Huddy like last year, you know, somebody go for a few, but I did see a one positive, if we're still finishing on offense, was, you know, I think every score was an independent person. So like seven guys hit the end zone, and that's just like some good confidence boost, right? Like you have, you know, your tight end, two receivers, both your quarterbacks get in the end zone. You have some, the running backs get in. So just getting kind of spread across the board, a lot of dudes get that, that payoff, that confidence boost of finding the end zone. But, I don't know. I feel like neutral about the offense kind of from this game. I don't think I was going to feel different, but I think I feel net negative about the defense.
Yeah. 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 Cause I mean, the pass rush still wasn't there. You lose Eddie V, which sucks. You know, the defensive line depth was already a concern. Now you lose one of the dudes who, you know, you can count on to put in a 7 out of 10 at least. Right. So, yeah, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see what we do with the rotation there. Obviously, TJ Jackson has probably looked like our best guy, so I'm guessing that means more snaps for him. So maybe that's a good thing this week. But yeah, need some guys to step up. I mean, Asani Redwood has looked okay, I think, through a couple weeks. But yeah, gonna need Mulba and Sean Martin to step up. You know, because I do think this Pitt offensive line is potentially. Potentially vulnerable. It was a weakness last year, maybe improved by the scheme a little bit, but it's going to be something I think we need to take advantage of. And then, yeah, the secondary, like, I don't know. I know this is one of the reader questions is, you know, what can we expect it to get fixed? Like, what do we do to get it fixed? Let me see who that was from. I had it pulled up here. Sorry. And of course it goes all the way back to the end of the chat. So I'll give credit out, but you know, we threw everybody out there, right? Like Hollis got beat for a touchdown. Fagan had the two pass interference penalties. You know, I don't think Garnes really did anything. It looks like this team is just struggling to find the ball in the air. Possibly struggling to pass dudes off with the you know, the zone coverage. And then obviously when we're in man, I feel like we're just getting run by, even by Albany. So yeah, big concerns there. Need to get it sorted out. You know, it feels like there too often that there are guys open kind of like deep middle of the field and there's just not a safety there. And I don't get it. So maybe that's an adjustment we can make, is just run a little bit more, you know, like pure cover 3, cover 4 kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But personnel wise, I'm not sure who else you throw out there, because, you know, I think one of the positives, part of the propaganda that we ate this spring, summer and fall was, no, the two guys who are the two guys have established themselves as the two guys, right? Like Hollis and Garnes, like these guys are good players. We don't need to worry about them. And to this point, that has not been true. So I don't know. Yeah, maybe this is a game to get right, get a little confidence going, change things up a little bit with like the types of coverages we're playing. Maybe that helps them out a little bit. But yeah, net negative overall, for sure.
Yeah, just kind of repeating some of the stuff you said. But yeah, I mean, the secondary, definitely the glaring weak spot to me. Yeah, Garnett Hollis played 41 snaps. He had a 48 PFF grade for the game, pretty bad. Yeah. Jaheim Joseph played 55 snaps. He went with a 43.8 PFF grade.
That ain't going to do it.
That ain't going to do it, especially when this is the competition. Garnes was a 61.2. When you look across like who played more than 10 snaps, you only have one guy in coverage with a coverage grade above like a low 60, and that's Aubrey Burks. So, yeah, it's got to be better. Jacoby Spells played all right when he was in there. Gallagher actually got 9 snaps in coverage and played all right, which is a really interesting wrinkle. I think those are kind of later game snaps, but interesting wrinkle there. But yeah, the defense was pretty underwhelming. Reed Carrico, probably your best player on the day. He had a nice day. You mentioned TJ Jackson. He had 6 pressures. Sean Martin also had 6 pressures. So, you know, there were some spots in there, but you got to have more in a game like this. And you hope it's just a like sleepwalking through the opponent sort of thing, not respecting the opponent. That's what I like. You know, I just feel like there's endless excuses when you play games like this. So it is what it is. I think flush it. Big one coming up. So, Yeah, I mean, that's all I really have to say on it. I feel like it's fine. We did what we did. This is our free win. We have 11 power games. This was the free win. And we're going to learn.
We did. Looking around the Big 12, any results last week step out or jump out that you need to that we need to touch on?
Yeah, I think there's a few. BYU held on over SMU on Friday night, actually, I thought was a pretty gutsy win. SMU had the ball in their territory all night and couldn't put points on the board. So BYU just, I think this was a stolen game. I think they were double-digit dogs and pretty nice win for them. I don't know if they're really going to be that great this year, but they're 2-0. Yeah, and then going around the league, I mean, I think Oklahoma State, Arkansas, I don't know if you caught that game. It was nuts.
Yeah, they had no business winning that one either. It was they got outgained by 200-300 yards in that game. It was bad.
Yeah, and I mean, it was just wacky the whole game. The fourth quarter was kind of back and forth. You go to overtime, and I think the first overtime you had both kickers miss. Oklahoma State, I felt like, played really conservative and just were like, yeah, we'll kick the field goal, and then missed it. And, you know, they still pull it out in double OT, but weird game. Yeah, I don't know. There were some good ones, though, in the league. I mean, Kansas State beating Tulane, that was a pretty close game. It really came down to the final drive. Yeah, I mean, I think they got a pick, like, in the end zone to sort of clinch it versus Tulane. So that was a closer one than I think most people expected. Iowa State from the dead. Rocco Beck, I mean, I don't know. That was they were dead in that game in the third quarter. And then, you know, they kind of have a shot play workout and then even getting the ball with, like, very little time left, get it down 50-some yard field goal to win it.
Yeah, I think, you know, one other positive result, Houston looks much better against Oklahoma this week, right? They get blown up by, what was it, UNLV the week before, hold Oklahoma to 16 points. Almost pull that one out of their ass. What, they lose 16-12. I think the two bad results, Kansas kind of choking it away against Illinois. And then Colorado just getting smoked by. Colorado is in shambles right now. Like, I mean, that's just, also Texas Tech. Texas Tech got smoked by Washington State. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think anybody looked great this week. A lot of teams look like they have cracks. Yeah, you know, I think I was texting you on Sunday. I was driving back from South Carolina. Of like, you know, I kind of feel worse about our team, but strangely feel better about our chances in this conference. Yeah. Just because, you know, you look around, all the teams that were supposed to be great, like Utah beats Baylor by 11. Baylor's not good. You know, Kansas State needs a pick in the end zone to hold off Tulane. Arizona only beats Northern Arizona by 12. Yeah, so, you know, it still feels like this conference is wide open if we can sort our shit out. I think UCF had the best win, 45-14 over Sam Houston. Not that that's a powerhouse by any means. But, yeah, still feels like it's wide open after watching last week. I know a lot of teams are still sorting themselves out the same way we are. So, you know, we'll have to see how it continues to shake out. One more week till conference play. So
it's wide open.
Yeah, wide open.
I think I'm putting Kansas on a mild fraud alert. I'm just like, I think we sort of pointed it out last week, or at least we brought it up about the coordinator switch. Like, hey, is this the same Kansas offense? They didn't really look good versus Illinois. That game was close, but they didn't look like they were ever really going to take it. You mentioned Utah sneaking past Baylor by 11. They had a blocked field goal return in that game. I mean, that game was like not a lot of points, but that game was played pretty close. And then I think, you know, of course, Cincinnati, there's an interesting parallel here. So West Virginia played Penn State game one. We're down 27-6 at some point in the game. It's like in the third quarter. It was down 27-6 in this game to Cincinnati. Just think about what you felt in that Penn State game when we were down 27-6. Pitt ran this thing back on Cincy, and I would say Cincy kind of choked it more. It was maybe a 50-50 of really coming back and Cincy really just choking it up. But Pitt coming from the dead, 28-27 win at Cincinnati. sets up a nice one this week. I mean, I'm not ever rooting for Pitt, but, you know, I like that elf on the right foot. It builds the week up a little bit.
Yep.
So what about this coming week? Anything in the Big 12 catching your eye?
Yeah, man. I think there's two good ones Friday night. Got UNLV going to Kansas. Remember we just said UNLV smoked Houston a couple weeks ago. Kind of a frisky team. So, you know, Kansas on 1-2 watch here before coming into Morgantown the following week. I don't know. You would hope that they take care of business on a Friday night at home, but who knows? And then the other one, Arizona-Kansas State non-conference game in Manhattan, 7 o'clock, or well, I guess 8 o'clock, 8 o'clock Friday night. So two good ones Friday night. And then, you know, kind of looking around the league, Utah State could be interesting. You know, I think BYU, Wyoming on Saturday night is kind of interesting. And then another, I guess this is a conference game, UCF-TCU, or is that another non-con?
I think that's our first conference game of the year. Yeah.
Yeah. So some good matchups there aside from ours. Other than that, you know, a lot of G5 and or you know, lower FBS opponents for the folks around the league. You know, I guess Rice Houston could be interesting because Houston hasn't looked good at all yet, but
yeah. Sort of similar with Cincy, Miami, Ohio. Cincy is only favored by 2.5. So, you know, it's like maybe not the best game, but could be close. I do think UCF-TCU could be a good game. I mean, I'm kind of interested to see this UCF team. We sort of raved about them a little bit in the offseason. They're at least opening as 1.5-point dogs at in Fort Worth this weekend. So I'm definitely interested to see that. It'll be 7:30, so after the Mountaineers win by at least 2 touchdowns, maybe tune into that one.
Yeah, find a nice bar somewhere in Pittsburgh to celebrate at. Watch that. Yep.
Might have to. All right, so let's get into Pitt. You ready?
I could not be more ready.
Big game. Backyard brawl. It's a big one. I think it's always big, but it's... I'm fact checking myself real quick because they've played this thing so many times. I want to get the number right. But backyard brawl. This is the Pitt leads the series 62-41, and there's 3 ties in there. Obviously, we've only played twice in very recent memory. Do you know that Pitt fired their athletic director today? We're recording on Monday.
I did see that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a. I don't know what that was about, especially on this week. Feels like a odd week to do that, but yeah, I think Pitt. So Pitt's played 2 games this year. They played Kent State, they cleaned them up, and they played Cincinnati, which we just talked about. They kind of came from behind and won 28-27. You know, we previewed Pitt in the offseason, and we talked about you know, some of the changes. We talked about some of the additions, new offensive coordinator, new running back addition that we mentioned. And I have to say, when I look back at my notes, at least at the 2 primary positions on offense, quarterback and running back, you know, our notes, we've only seen 2 games, and our notes are not super accurate already because Nate Yarnell is not the starting quarterback. They're going with the freshman. And, you know, we have all this stuff about Rodney Hammond, and we've seen him do his thing. I don't even think he's playing, right?
No, he was ruled academically ineligible the week before the Kent State game.
Yeah. So, you know, your QB1 and RB1, from what we thought when we talked about this maybe a month or two ago, it's not the case. And it's worked out okay for them, I guess, so far. I mean, you know, I think they're moving the ball. Eli Holstein is your quarterback. He's a freshman. He's 6'4", 225. And, yeah, I mean, he's at the helm here. He's has 633 yards in 2 games. So he has both games he threw over 300 yards. I will say, I watched a lot of the Cincinnati. I watched, like, the condensed version, like the, you know, the 15-minute, but here's the whole game version with Pitt Cincy. Mm-hmm. He throws the ball downfield. He stands tall in the pocket. He's not afraid to even, like, move up in the pocket. He throws a lot of balls that he got pretty lucky with. And I was really happy to log on to PFF and see that that was sort of justified. The Cincinnati game, he had one big-time throw and five turnover-worthy plays. He got out of there with just one pick. But on the season, for both games, he has four big-time throws, eight turnover-worthy plays. And I will say that is like the glaring thing to me is this guy is going to give us chances. He might burn us deep a few times, but hopefully we can take advantage of those chances. That's sort of what I'm seeing out of him.
Yeah, I was pulling the numbers up here as you were talking through them as well, because I saw that earlier today. Yeah, 8.6 turnover-worthy play rate. So literally one out of every 10 times, you know, that he's putting the ball in the air. The other team is a decent shot at taking it away from him, which is not ideal. Which is not ideal. He's gotten away with it so far, I think. You know, I mean, Kent State lost to St. Francis, PA last week, so you know, FCS loss. You're probably talking about, if not the worst team in FBS, one of the 10, right? And then obviously Cincinnati, you know, we talked about it, like their defense was a dumpster fire last year. We didn't think they were going to be much better this year. So, you know, take this with a grain of salt, but also this hammers this other point home, about the turnover worthy plays, where like, if you're doing it against like literally two of the worst defenses, probably in college football, I don't know if we're much better, but we should have chances. We should have chances. Yeah, man. You know, I think either way, you know, I'm not sure how much stock really to put into these two wins, just because I, you know, quality of opponent. But they're going to be flying high, man. You know, they showed some testicular fortitude to come back against Cincinnati. Pitt's going to be confident coming into this game. You know, they're going to be thinking they can and should win the game, right? Like, you know, it's a rivalry game. It's on their field, their field in quotes. But you know. They're the 2-0 team here. They're the 2-0, you know, talk about the two all you want, but they're the 2-0 team. So,
yeah. And they made the change in offensive coordinator this year, and two games in, I think Pitt fans have to enjoy it. They're throwing the ball, which Narduzzi hates. They're doing it well. Cade Bell, OC coming in from Western Carolina. Yep. And he brought with him Des Reed, who has been a problem in these first 2 weeks. I mean, Des Reed in just two games is almost 300 yards rushing. He's averaging 8.7 a carry. And dude, he can go. He's a small guy, 5'8". But he's pretty electric, especially in the open field. I mean, he just kind of like finds the hole, kind of hard to see, and then he just kind of explodes out. They kind of have some weapons here, at least with these two guys who we weren't expecting to be the starters. They performed well.
Yeah, I think you talk about the differences on this offense between last year and this year. First one, Holstein, the quarterback. You already mentioned, you know, I think similar profile to Drew Aller. You know, maybe like a middle-class man's Drew Aller, like big dude standing there. He can throw it downfield. He can move enough. You know, he's not like I wouldn't call him a super athletic quarterback, but he's mobile. You add Des Reed instead of Rodney Hammond. Infinitely more juice than Rodney Hammond. Rodney Hammond was a manageable, he's a sledgehammer, but that's manageable. You know, like we have guys who can fill a hole and put him on the ground. Cade Bell. So, I mean, you mentioned it. They're like 57% pass through two games this year. They were like that much run. So, I mean, it's literally like a fully flip of the offense just in terms of the tendencies. And then the pace that they're playing at. You know, I think we talked about it. Cade Bell in his bio has play fast, score faster. And the offensive product reflects that. I mean, you, through two games, they're averaging 74 plays a game, up from 60 last year. They're snapping it every 20.7 seconds, which has to be in the top 10 in the country. I mean, that's just an insane tempo that they go at, you know. I think the Kent State game is obviously closer to probably what they want to be than Cincinnati. I think Cincinnati pressured them enough to get them out of some of the stuff they wanted to do. Cincinnati had like 19 pressures in the game. I think only two or three sacks, but I mean, this is a team, they want to get, the Holstein wants to get it out quick, and they're forcing touches to Des Reed. And, you know, so it turns out when you get rid of your bad players and replace them with exciting ones, and you let your offensive coordinator cook, which we weren't sure was going to happen, right? I mean,
yeah,
Narduzzi has a history of kind of you're the offensive coordinator, but it's like still my team kind of a thing. It seems like he's letting Cade Bell do what he wants. But yeah, they're much more exciting than I thought they would be schematically. And they actually have a couple guys who cause you problems. So yeah, it's a defense. I mean, any team that goes that fast, regardless of who they are, it can cause issues. Like if they get you stuck in a matchup situation for that drive, that just, it fucking sucks. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Dez Reed. Dez Reed's top 10 nationally in rushing yards, yards per carry, and he's top 5 nationally in targets and receiving yards among running backs. So, yep. Like, this is a guy, I think he has 45 touches through 2 games. I think that's going to be a big story in this game is, like, are our linebackers and our safeties in the right spots? Because, like, they will isolate him on, you know, linebackers, and that's something that's hurt us so far this year. We saw a couple plays against Albany where you know, they would get a running back on like a little out route kind of a thing against the linebacker and pick up easy yards. They'll run him across the middle on like a little Texas route kind of a thing and throw him the ball. So placing a premium on our dudes being disciplined, staying in the right spots, and then obviously like making the tackle. And he's not an easy dude to tackle. You know, he's little, 5'8", 175, but he runs hard. You know, I mean, so he's going to be the dude. If we can stop him, I'll feel really good about it. But it's not easy. It's not easy.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think he's 100% the key on this offense. Through 2 games, small sample size. He's only been at the FBS level for 2 games. He had a great career at Western Carolina. I mean, he was like 90 PFF grade kind of guy. Yeah, I mean, the reality is he has like 750 all-purpose yards through like 2 games, which is great. I mean, that you can't any way about it. You know, looking at your other pass catchers, you have Kanata Mumpfield. I feel like we've talked about him for several years now. He's probably your biggest deep threat, along with Kenny Johnson. Those are the two guys you might see streaking down the field. Gavin Bartholomew, the tight end, also. I feel like they get him involved kind of at the right time. He's definitely burnt us on some seam stuff before. So, yeah, and this is like you mentioned, this is a different Pitt offense. They're not afraid to throw the ball. And they're not afraid to go fast. This feels like a very different Pitt offense than we've seen the last 2 times we have seen them. What about the offensive line? Are we feeling good, bad, neutral?
TBD. You know, I mean, like I mentioned, they graded out as the worst in the ACC last year, one of the worst in all of Power 5 per PFF last year. It's the majority of the same guys. You know, I think they might have lost one starter and replaced him with, you know, kind of a similar situation to us. Replace him with a guy who had pretty significant snaps as a rotation guy last year. They haven't graded out. I don't think they're in the top half of the ACC in either run block or pass block grade, but like you watch them play, and I mean, it sure seems like they're doing a good job of getting Reed like through creases and into the secondary. I mean, 8.7 yards a carry, the dude. I did the same thing you did, watch the condensed game against Cincinnati, and it felt like once a drive, he was into the secondary, 20 yards down the field within a second, you know? So I don't know about the grades. It seems like they're doing a good job of getting him creases, though. I think, like you said, probably hard to see him. Similar to Jaheim White, you know, he's through the line before you really even know that he has the ball. I think maybe some pass protection issues. You know, they didn't really show up against Kent State, but, you know, like I mentioned, Cincinnati had 19 pressures. They got to Holstein a couple of times. And sacked him and you know, forced him into some bad throws. Corleone playing, by the way. I don't know if you noticed that, but so that's good. Good for him. Good for Cincinnati. But they've been good enough. I mean, it's hard to say they haven't been good enough. I mean, Pitt put up damn near 600 yards on Kent State and damn near 500 on Cincinnati last week. So, you know, clearly they're not hurting them too much. I saw against Cincinnati, they only allowed like 4 tackles for loss. And yeah, like I mentioned, the couple sacks. So it's not like they're giving up a ton of negatives. I do think though, you know, say they're average, right? Like, I think what I'm watching, like one of the matchups to watch is can we win at the line of scrimmage against these guys, right? Like, can we plug up the gaps? Can we pressure Holstein? And like, how do we do that? How do we go about doing that? And we've blitzed a fair amount this year, but I feel like we've gotten smoked on it. So like, we're going to need to make some adjustments with that. And, I don't know, figure something else out because I mean, you know, the offense is head and shoulders above what I was expecting from them this year. They got dudes who can cause problems. The scheme, the tempo seem to cause problems. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, what are you watching for offensively? Like, what are you, like, you know, matchups, one or two matchups where it's like, this is going to kind of decide it for you?
Well, I think we have to be able to put Des Reed in a box a little bit because, yeah, if he gets hot, and also, I'm sorry, I just keep looking at Des Reed stuff. He also had a 78-yard punt return in their opener. I mean, like, he's all over the field. He's the kind of guy you just want him to have the ball, and good things generally happen. Yeah, we have to really, I think, prove early that that's not going to fly, that we're going to be able to contain the run, because you don't want him getting hot early and they're just going to be creatively getting him the ball all day. Yeah, I like our chances a lot better. As weird as it sounds with them, you know, with this freshman quarterback throwing the ball around, I hope that that's something that we can contain. But yeah, our defense hasn't really inspired confidence in that way either. So I think you got to stop the run first in a game like this with Des Reed. That's what I would be keying in on. And then can we just limit the deep ball? Like, this quarterback, his tendency so far is to give opportunities to the defense. Don't get burnt deep. Don't let it be a three-play drive. Like, keep it in front of you. Force him to make the right decision every single time. And, yeah, as weird as it is talking about Pitt over the last 2 years we've watched them, I think really it's going to be like, can we limit big plays against this team? Can we keep them in front of us? Which is so, you know, this isn't Kenny Pickett, Jordan Addison. But, yeah, I think just keep them in front of us and make them beat us consistently, because I am worried about the deep ball over the top and the explosive run game. So I think stop the run, keep things in front of us.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to make some adjustments in coverage too. You know, we've talked plenty about that, but like, if you look at the areas where Pitt had success against Cincinnati, it was crossers against man coverage. It was seam shots against zone, backs isolated on linebackers. All things that Albany gave us fucking trouble with, right? So, like, we gotta do something a little bit different there, or else, you know, yeah, could be kind of a shitty Saturday. But I don't know. I'm still optimistic. I think our defense, I think our front six can kind of win the line of scrimmage. You know, Reed is really, really good. Reed is really, really good. But it does make it easy when you have one guy who has, or it makes it easier. It doesn't make it easy because he's, like I said, he's fucking good. But it does help when one guy has such a high, usage rate, I guess, for lack of a better word, right? You know, I think they've run 150 plays this year. He's gotten the ball on like 50 of them. So, you know, it's nice to know that on 33% of the time when he's on the field, you can assume that he's probably going to touch the ball. I think that helps. But like you said, you can't let him get out the back because he can really hurt you doing that.
Yeah. And as far as their defense goes, I don't know that I have a ton of new knowledge on them based on what we've seen. I mean, Kent State got 24 points on them. Like you mentioned, it's not a great team. One of those was a defensive return. You know, they didn't really move the ball very well. Kent State only had 212 yards. They tried to rush the ball 38 times for 31 yards. It's pretty bad. So, Pitt had a pretty solid day against them, but once again, I think there's a grain of salt there. Cincy this week, Soresby, the quarterback for Cincy, threw for 300. You know, he had a nice game. They allowed 150 rushing, 4.1 a carry. What would you think our offense needs to be? I don't know. When I watched the highlights, at least it felt like Soresby, who I would not say is one of the best quarterbacks in the Big 12, seemed like there were open dudes and he was finding them, and like there was space in the Pitt defense. Would you think we need to go more pass first in a situation like this, or do you like our two running backs and establish the run?
No, I think you got to establish the run, because I think that's where our whole offensive swag comes from. You know, establishing a run, making sure we can get that 4 or 5 anytime we want it. Hopefully getting Jaheim loose a couple times in the secondary. Hopefully getting Garrett involved a little bit. You know, I think obviously he was much more involved against Albany than he was against Penn State. With, you know, with just design stuff where like we emptied out and it's just like a quarterback counter or quarterback, dart kind of a thing. But I think, you know, like you said, there are going to be opportunities there in the passing game. The one thing that I would note about the Pitt defense is that, so, you know, I think we talked about in the summer, on paper, the talent isn't what it has been. A lot of new faces in there. But despite that, they've still generated their share of havoc, I would say. And especially the pressure numbers are still really impressive. They have 40 pressures through two games. And 19 of them have come from off-ball linebackers. You know, I think that was pretty evident in Cincinnati. Like, they blitz all the fucking time. They had 60% blitz rate on pass plays through two games. And so, like, opportunities are going to be there. But I think, you know, maybe the number one key in, like, are we going to be able to generate explosives in the passing game is, can we pick up their blitzers? They kind of come from all over the place. But it felt like a lot of the time they're coming off the edge. And so we're going to have to just be, you know, Johnny on the spot with, like, the call outs, making sure everybody's on the same page. Like, is the line sliding left and the back's picking up right? Where's the back picking up? You know, like, all that kind of stuff. And I think if we can do that, I think our guys can win. I mean, they're going to press up on us. They don't play a ton of man. It's like press zone, oddly. But, you know, I think our guys can win against that. I think our guys can get open. It's just like, can we pick up the blitz and give Garrett the time in the passing game? I think we're going to be able to run it on him. Like you mentioned, Cincinnati ran it on him. Corey Kiner had 150 yards. Sorsby didn't do much. And I think we thought he was a pretty good runner. Never really got loose against them. But I think if we can pick up their blitzers, I think we have the talent, and I think Garrett's good enough to find guys open against the zone coverage.
The over-under of this game is 60.5. West Virginia's favored by 2.5 as we record. I've seen that line last week was 6.5 to West Virginia, and then I think when the line immediately came out, it was a pick 'em. So I've seen a good bit of movement over the last handful of days on that. I feel like this could end up being a game where both teams might actually favor their offense and you might see some points. I mean, it might be a back and forth. It's a 3:30 game. You know, last time we played at Pitt, it was a night game and there was like 10 years of angst built up. I'm curious to see if it has the same atmosphere this year. I think that was just an awesome college football experience. The first game back at Pitt 2 years ago. Interested to see, you know, Pitt is not coming off their ACC championship and the great high hopes they had. You know, they were like a 2-win team last year. So interested to see what the atmosphere for the game is this week. I don't know if you have any other comments on the game or if we want to like segue to questions. I'm sure they're all related to the backyard brawl, or most of them.
Yeah, a lot of them are. I'm expecting a good crowd, man. I mean, they started 2-0. You know, I think if they had maybe lost to Cincinnati, like if it had stayed 27-6, I think this would have been probably a 60-40 Pitt crowd, you know, kind of a thing. Like, I'm expecting a ton of WVU fans there. I think Pitt's going to show up for this. I think they can win. You know, I think they think that they can win this game. And it's going to be up to us to go out and, you know, show them that ain't going to be, you know, how it's going down. We haven't played anything approaching our best football yet.
I sure hope so.
Or else, you know, the kid's going to be out several hundred dollars on the over 6.5. But it seems to be Neil says it, like, everybody, every interview, the vibe is like, yeah, we're better. We were, like, even after Albany, we played better, but, like, we haven't touched who we are yet, you know, kind of a thing. This would be a great one to get that momentum going. Start trending in that direction, heading into conference play. You got Kansas coming in, who's maybe a little questionable. But, yeah, you know, I think the nice thing about this game is that you still have a lot of dudes on this team who were there the last time we were up there, right? And who probably feel like we probably deserve to win that game. Maybe should have won
that game. I mean, Garrett was right there in the thing at the end of the game when they're waving us out, you know, like, you know, yep. Yeah, we have lots of guys who experienced that firsthand.
So, you know, I think it's a game we're going to be up for. Hopefully not too up. We already saw how that went against Penn State. We were a little too excited. But, I'm expecting another great college football atmosphere. I want to fucking beat these guys so bad, man. Like, oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, like, how much is it at stake? Like, you know, we're 2-1. It's where we wanted to be probably heading into conference play. We make them 2-1, you know, maybe start them on a little downward trend heading into the ACC. We take the 2-1 lead on the Revival series, which mm-hmm. is huge. And just really stake the claim is like, you know, look, you can feel yourself, but you still ain't us. You still ain't that good. I think, man, you know, I think a lot of the questions we've thrown out there, I feel good that we can come out on the right side of those. You know, can we pick up, like, you know, can we pick up the blitz? Sure, we can. Can our receivers beat them? Sure, they can. Can we bottle up Dez Reed? Yeah, why not? You know, so fuck these guys. Let's go out there and get it done.
Love that. I love that. Yeah, I also just would add, I think both coaches, this is a somewhat significant game for both coaches as well. Both coaches are deep into their tenure and, you know, results are needed for both.
Get this motherfucker fired, man. As much as Narduzzi is the perfect guy to be the head coach at Pitt because he's so fucking, God, he's so hateable. Get this guy fired, man. Yeah. Get this guy fired.
What's on our question wire this week?
That's what I'm looking at here now. So first question from Slawblog. I thought Neil did a good job spreading the ball out versus Albany and getting some of the new guys' looks. Which of the new wide receivers, freshmen or transfers, do you want or think we should be schemed more this week against Pitt? Love that point. And I think actually Kazaza made a similar point on the post-game recap from the Albany game is like, yeah, we don't have like the one guy, but like maybe having like eight guys isn't the worst thing, you know,
yeah.
Where it's like, maybe you don't need a primary guy. Maybe that makes it, I mean, that was kind of how it was last year, right? Where, you know, game to game, it was a different guy who was coming out and making the big plays, scoring the touchdowns, having the most catches. I was intrigued by Justin Robinson. I'm glad that he got, well, I think he got the first touchdown in the game, right? And he didn't play hardly at all. Definitely didn't make an impact against Penn State. You know, I feel like there's an opportunity to kind of use him almost interchangeably with Cole Taylor. He's a big body. Not that you want to take Cole Taylor out of what he's doing because he's probably been our best offensive player. You know, or he's been one of our best offensive players, but would love to see Robinson get more involved somehow. Really want to see Day-Day get more involved. I mean, every time he touches the ball, it seems like you hold your breath. He's just one of those guys, like, you can kind of tell. He hasn't really hit, like, a big, big one yet, but you can tell that it's kind of there. So I think trying to figure out how to get him involved is big, whether that's, like, jet sweeps, whether that's, you know, some sort of – even as a decoy, man, you know, like, it feels like guys like that who – when you put them in the game, the defense notices, right? And so, like, maybe put him in the game, motion him over, little jet sweep, or a little bubble screen fake, and throw it deep over the top of it kind of a thing when defense is like, hey, Farmer's in the game. They're going to try and get him the ball. You know, I think there's opportunities for stuff like that. Jaden Bray, man, I had such high expectations for him, and it just hasn't been great so far. So I don't, you know, maybe this is a good week to kind of get him going. But I mean, I guess my answer is all three. I don't know. I'd like to see all three of those guys get involved more. I love having West Virginia guys out there. I love having Hudson Clement. I love having Preston Fox. But it does feel like we're playing maybe too many Morgantown High football players at one time. You know, you have Preston Fox, you have Nick Malone. Like, those weren't good Morgantown High teams. They haven't won a fucking state championship since I was there. You know, at some point, you got to have a little bit of pedigree out mm-hmm. there. And, like, as good as Fox, as good as – I mean, Clement's fine. As good as Fox has been, like, you want to start seeing Robinson and Bray both getting a little bit more involved in the offense, start taking more of the snaps. Just because, I mean – size matters. Football's a game of physics, you know, and those guys are both way bigger – just as fast, if not faster. And, you know, you gotta figure out ways to get guys like that touches. I don't know. What are your thoughts? Yeah, I'll stop talking.
No, I mean, I agree with pretty much everything you said there. If I had to single a guy who I want to see them continue to give chances, it's Day-Day Farmer, just because the way, just in two games, they've creatively tried to give him the ball.
tells me that there's something there. And yeah, kind of what you said is like, you kind of hold your breath almost when he gets the ball. You feel like something's going to happen. He had a brutal drop this week. Keep giving him chances. I want to see, I want to see him in space.
Yep. Yep. Put the ball in his hands. I bet good things happen. Anger asked, what can we do to fix the pass defense going forward? We've already kind of answered that. I have no fucking clue. unfortunately,
that's a Jordan Leslie. What would you do to fix the pass defense?
You know, there is the argument to be made that they scored 0 points when Leslie was calling the plays. I know that we like to hate.
Yeah, that is
hate actually. On Leslie. We like to hate on him in the smoking.com musket Discord. Smokingmusket.com Discord. Smoking.com musket. I think it's got to be coverage adjustments, just because I don't know who else we can throw out there. We've thrown all the guys out there. You know, it doesn't feel like there's an Andrew Wilson Lamp or a Keyshawn Cobb or somebody like that out there where it's like they're actively hurting us by being out there. Even though our guys have been, I don't know who else we would throw out there. Maybe give Jacoby Spells more run. Maybe give Rodney Gallagher more run. I mean, shit.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, we're talking about Day-Day. Like, they fill the same role. Like, if Day-Day makes Rodney redundant on offense, then see what he can do on defense. So,
is Leslie okay from the collision from the weekend? Is he?
Yeah, I think he got some stitches, but I think he's good. I think he's okay. Good.
Because I know he missed a couple series of play calling, which is what Jordan was referring to if you weren't sure. But, like, yeah, that kind of an odd thing. He got blown up on a play, though, right? Like, they were coming out of bounds and
got smoked. Yeah. Yeah. I think Caden, a little friendly fire. I think Caden Beiser got him. And that's not a guy you want to get. I mean, that's a guy you can maybe want to run away from a little bit. That's not a guy you want to get hit by. So. let's see. So Cincy Year also asked about the secondary. Do you think that will be the case? Do we think that the fixes that we saw last year will be the case again this year? I sure fucking hope so. Knight676 asks, how angry are you that we're still talking about the secondary sucking? very. Like, what?
Yeah.
You know, I think it's twofold, right? It's that the guys that we brought in were good last year, demonstrably, and significant snaps.
Yep.
And so why are they struggling this year? I think it's both pieces of that, where it's like, what are we doing to make these guys play worse? And then I think I'm pissed off about the propaganda all fucking summer and fall. You know, we hear about how Hollis and Fagan Hollis and Garnes, all they do is make good plays. They're both really good players. We're bigger, we're longer, we're faster. We're gonna be able to press guys. It's like, man, these motherfuckers are getting run by everybody we play.
Yep.
And so I think it's twofold. I'm pissed off about the propaganda, and I don't understand like what we're doing differently to make them perform worse than they were last year. Because I mean, Hollis especially, the dude was in the Big Ten. You know, like, say what you want about the level of quarterback play and the offenses in that conference, but, like, it's better than Albany. It's better than Albany. And so, yeah, I don't know. It's pretty, yes, angry. Still angry. like 9 out of 10, angry. Thoughts?
Yeah, I will say I think we're going to learn the most this week that we have this season. We played a team I think that most people would agree is better than us, and we played a team that was far worse than us that even positive or some negative results I tend to just kind of throw out because there's a lot of variables at play. We're going to learn a lot about where the secondary is at this week, and I'm going to hold my comments till then. I totally agree with the anger. This is the first week where we should both be up for the game. Like, it's not an FCS game. We should be up for this game. It's a rivalry game. And we're playing a team who is of the most similar skill level that we should expect. So I will answer that question next week.
I think we're better. But yes, agreed. George asks, if I donated better mics, would you guys use them? It's like, dude, I have a I wish you could see the video. I have a nice snowball mic. I don't know what kind of mic Joel has, but we're not just out here on our AirPods.
Yeah, I got a decent mic. I don't know. I don't know about the podcast audio game, but maybe we need to get into it.
If you did donate better ones, though, yeah, we'd probably use them.
Yeah, sure. The NIL fund, send it our way.
Kyle asks, is there a correlation between Neil's play calling and his goatee? Seems to be. I don't know. We look pretty conservative against Penn State. He shaves the goatee, and we look a little bit more aggressive against Albany. Nothing to do with opponents, obviously. Probably the goatee. Thoughts?
You pro goatee?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I just thought it was hilarious that he shaved it like as soon as the Penn State game ended. He was just like, nah, fuck this. I'm done with it.
I mean, Garrett said he's a goatee guy. You know? Yeah. So I don't know. I did. So, obviously, you can see I shaved the beard. We have to shave for the program thing that I was at in Clemson this weekend. But last week was varying stages of shaved beard. Had mutton chops for a day. Had a goatee for a day. Had the mustache for a day. Actually, kind of scared myself. Forgot I had the mustache and, like, walked into the bathroom and turned the light on. Was just like, Jesus Christ. And, you know, obviously my wife hated it. I was like, just give it a second. It'll grow on you.
Dude, you got to commit to full mustache. Like, you just, it's a way of life.
You got a good one, man. I mean, you do have a good one. So, yeah, no, I'm pro goatee. I don't know about the correlation, though. Zentrady Elite asks, will Neil ever coach with a killer instinct, or is he always going to coach fearfully? I feel like he overthinks everything. He's a victim of the analytics. He's a victim of, you know, I think I made the comment about like Leslie of playing the tendency and not playing the situation. And I feel like Neil's the same way. So I don't know. I think that, I mean, shit, you know, you go all the way back to Pitt, the 4th-and-1 at Pitt 2 years ago, right? And it's like, yeah, sure, the tendency, the analytics say you should probably punt that. Situation says you fucking go. And I don't know if Neil's ever, I think that's just who Neil is. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I do think, I will give Neil a little credit, is I do think he's one of the more aggressive in terms of going for on 4th down specifically. Yes. Of yeah. Coaches in the game right now. Like, I do think he tends on the quote unquote aggressive side of that. And, you know, I heard a good thing about analytics. I mean, I'm a very data centric person with like a lot of things I do. I definitely think analytics have a big spot in the game, but it's obviously not everything. But you think about poker or blackjack, something like that. You know, what he talks about, he talked about in his press recently was about, you know, you might be at the table and your gut tells you hit or tells you stay or whatever. And, you know, but you can go by the book and, you know, play, you can play the hand the best way possible and still lose. And it's like the right decision. And I think he's very married to that idea. I think he is always going to be conservative. Especially in like our offensive attack game plan. I think that's just his nature. I think he's had success with it at the G5 level, in terms of like a grinded out type win. I don't foresee us ever having a high flying, crazy, you know, up tempo, big risk taking offense under him. I just don't think that's his nature.
Which I do feel like is a bit of a criticism.
Yeah.
At this point, you know, you have to coach a power four
now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you have to coach a Power 4 program differently than you coach a G5 program. You know, you can't play not to lose. You can't play to shorten every single game. You can't play to minimize, because then all you're doing is counting on the margins to swing your way every single time, and they never do. They are never going to do that. You know, they'll do it sometimes. They did it a lot last year. Guess what? The 4 years before that, I'm trying to remember how long he's been here. 4 years before that, they didn't. You know, we were in a lot of close games that we came out on the wrong side of. So,
yeah.
You know, I think going for the throat, and to his credit, he did that against some of the worst teams last year. You know, BYU, Cincinnati, we blew out. But, yeah, I think it's just who he is, unfortunately. Yep. Let's see. Clarence Auvier asks, any of you guys ever been into a Turkish prison? No, but I hear they're lovely in the fall.
Can't say that I have, unfortunately.
Braden J.
You don't have any context on that? That was just the question.
It's a movie quote. I couldn't tell you the movie, but I think it's a movie quote.
Okay.
I'm going to look up for this next one, Winsipedia WVU Pitt. Braden J. asks, for funsies, talk about the record since the war. So let's go ahead and take a little peek at that.
I have the one stat, and I'm not sure if it's... Well, I guess so yeah. It's something... I know within 2 or 3 years, but... the youngest person, so if a Pitt fan ever tells you that, oh, you know, Pitt has the all-time series lead, Pitt, you know, historically is much better than West Virginia, you can say, yeah, I mean, maybe historically, sure, that's fine, back in the 1930s and 40s when Pitt was really good. The youngest person on this earth who can tell you that Pitt has a winning record during their lifetime over West Virginia is in their, like, mid-70s. So just, that's only response you need, is that does not matter. There's not a single year you can cherry pick since West Virginia won last year. There's not a single year that you can cherry pick right now that is younger than like 70 years old that they have a winning record during their lifetime.
I'm looking since 1990 and I'm getting 16-8 for the good guys. 16-8. So, and yeah, I mean, if you're just scrolling down through Winsipedia, it's a lot of gold squares and not that many blue squares since.
It evens out in like the early 50s, I think, is when it,
since like 1952. If you look before that, it's a lot of blue. But yeah, we're definitely smoking that ass. You know, anybody who's alive, we've been smoking that ass. Irrational asks, in what year will WVU even the series versus Pitt? Currently, like you said, 41-62-3. How many national championships will Neil Brown have by then? I answered and said 2045, because that is the difference there, and seven. Somebody rained on my parade, though, and said there's a 4-year break coming up here soon. So it'll probably be a little bit later than that. But let's say by like 2050, I think we even the series up. They're probably not going to win very many games between now and then. And yeah, national championships, just give me one. Give me one before I fucking die. That's all.
I'll take one. Yeah, I would give it all for just one. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I saw on Reddit recently, like, somebody asked a question, like, how many consecutive years of 5-7 would you take if your team could win one national championship? And it's like, so fucking many. So many.
A lot.
So many. Like 20?
We take them sometimes and it's not even payment for anything.
we don't get anything out of it.
Those are always geared at like Ohio State fans. Because I'm up here like they're like, it's, you know, here in Columbus, they're like Ryan Day's on the hot seat if we lose 2 games this year. And I'm like, you need a nice 4-8 season. You just need a few of them for your character sometimes.
Just one time, yeah, to build a little fucking hardiness, a little testicular fortitude. Yeah, y'all are spoiled. I was actually talking about that at the Clemson game. You know, I think our fans care more just because, you know, people like Clemson, it's just like you expect to win 10 games a year, you know? And so, like, I think when we're good, we care more than, like, teams kind of in our range care more because of that.
Fans of bad teams are actually always better fans. And
they're
better,
yeah.
That's a pretty, like, generic statement that's generally true. Though I will say there's this really funny duality of some people who live in Columbus who are like, Ohio State is the best team in the country, and if they're not, it's because of the coach or because of something and we should fire them. And then on Sunday, they're Cleveland Brown fans and they go to like every game and they just suffer. And it's a really funny like dichotomy.
Yeah. I know that being a Mountaineer fan has made me a better person for sure. Because I can deal with disappointment. So SCTV man, this is the last question and maybe a very fitting one to end on. If Neil loses this week, is he officially on the hot seat? Abso-fucking-lutely.
Right. Yeah. I think you're setting yourself up. We know we have a tough first like 4 or 5 games into the Big 12.
And if you're kind of stumbling into those 1 and 2 with no good performances, hey, if you go and run 4 of the 5, maybe things change. But I think it's more of an outlook thing where it's like, oh man, like this could get bad, ugly, horrendous really in a month. Like yeah. it could be all over in a month if you start sliding in that direction.
Yeah, it'll get easier. I think we both agree Pitt is better than we thought that they would be, but this is still not one of the 7 best teams we play.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mean to be too hyperbolic here, but it does not get easier. This is probably in the bottom half of our schedule. Yeah. And it's a rivalry game and weird things happen. You need to win this one.
It's a must. Yeah, it is a must win. You ask, I was like, is this a must win or just a nice to win? It's a fucking must win. You got to beat them.
Yeah.
No. Cool.
Good stuff. All right. Well, you can get at us in whatever the parking lot is called outside of Acrisure Stadium on Saturday, because we will be there. You can get at us on SmokingMuskit.com, on Twitter, we're WestByPod with underscores. Make sure you're in the Smoking Musket Discord channel if you're not. It is alive and well now that we're into full-blown football season, and that is where you can ask us questions for the pod each week. We'll be trying to remember to blast and at everyone out for question curation. Other than that, If you see us in Pittsburgh, say hey, and thanks as always for listening. We'll see you guys next time.
All righty, take care, gang.
New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all new Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
This message comes from our sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TELADOC health/whatsyourwhy.